From beach towels to tea towels, and from mugs to water bottles, the TNT Shop has it all. Browse our shop now at tntradio.live. This is the Steve Malzberg Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, folks, welcome aboard. It is 4 minutes after the hour of 10 p.m. on Friday night. Another week goes by here on the East Coast of the United States, and you know what day and time it is wherever you are listening to the Steve Malzberg Show. Well, well, well. Yesterday, on Thursday, you may recall, I can't show you the video, but I did mention that President Joe Biden fell on stage during the Air Force Academy commencement ceremony. Apparently, he had been up there shaking the hands of the graduates as they received their diplomas. And he was up there for about an hour and a half after he spoke, remained on stage doing the handshaking bit. And whether or not that had anything to do with it, when it was over and it was his turn to leave the stage, he started walking and immediately tripped and took quite a tumble, and then, you know, needed help getting up. They say he tripped on a sandbag. I mean, I don't know. I haven't seen a picture of the sandbag. And then he joked around and said he was sandbagged, you know, which is, you know what that means. So I don't know about that. All I know is it looked horrible. You feel sorry for an 80-year-old man who falls down. Nobody likes to fall down. He could have really injured himself. And we've seen him fall before. That's the issue. When our president is on the stage, literally and figuratively, or the world stage, or, you know, getting up into Air Force One, or coming down from Air Force One, as he's done both, and trips, not only is it very dangerous, I mean, he could tumble down those steps, but it just looks bad. It looks weak. It looks weak. And we'll get to that in a second. But he said he got sandbagged when he talked to reporters. Apparently, you know, he was referring to the fall he took after tripping on a sandbag. Again, I didn't see any sandbag. But that's what they say. But it didn't end there. It did not end there. When he departed, upon returning to the White House, after falling in Colorado Springs at the Air Force Academy, when he returned and exited from the helicopter, Marine One, on Thursday afternoon, and I saw this one also, again, I can't show it to you, unfortunately, he banged his head. You could see it. He banged his head, his forehead, while he stepped out of the helicopter, you know, right before or as he stepped out. He banged it on the kind of the inside of the top of the door to the plane. And then he rubbed it. And interestingly, as far as I could tell, he did not salute the Marine who was there to greet him, who salutes him and waits for the salute so he could put down his salute. He was probably so distracted and distressed and was rubbing his head that he forgot or didn't care or didn't even think about it. So this is just bad, bad, bad stuff. It's bad optics. It's bad. It's just all bad. There's nothing good about it. Nothing good about it. And every time it happens, you know, Kamala says, "Me? Me? Oh, okay." And then she laughs and she laughs and she puts, you know, her shoulders in. The left shoulder comes to the right one and the right one comes to the left one. And she looks like a whatever. I've told you what she looks like, especially when she's sitting on TV, being interviewed on a late night show or whatever, sitting in the chair, cracking up. And the way she sounds and the way she looks, if you didn't know, you would think she's drunk. You would think, what's this woman on? Now, I'm not saying she is. I don't believe she is. But there's something wrong with her. But that's beside the point. Well, it's beside the point. I mean, the point is, And by the way, it says forehead. I think, well, yeah, he couldn't have hit the back of his head unless he started walking out the door and then propped, you know, up a little bit and hit the back of the head. Because he looks like he was rubbing the back of his head. But he could have rubbed the back because he didn't want to make it too obvious or whatever. And he thought nobody saw, so he didn't want to rub his forehead. That would have looked worse. Whatever. It's just not good. Okay? It shows weakness. Weakness. Now, the media talked about it, not the Marine One bumping of the head incident, but the falling down incident. And CNN had their medical analyst on, a guy named Dr. Jonathan Reiner, who was also a member of the George W. Bush medical team. I'm not saying he's a Republican, but I'm saying he was on that team, G.W. Bush. And here's what he had to say on Aaron Burnett's show last night on CNN. This is number JU13.
Falls are really common, and they're especially common in the elderly. It's thought that about one out of every four people over the age of 65 will fall this year. So it's super common. This is about the third time we've seen the president fall. He fell twice going up the steps of Air Force One, once in 2021 and once earlier this year. And he has a stiff gait. And the stiff gait, which is felt to be secondary to, I think, some arthritis in his back, you know, contributes to him walking with this kind of shuffling gait. And if you hit a sandbag, there's not a lot of flexibility and you go down. Look, I would suggest to the president that he really needs to be careful. And on unsteady ground, it wouldn't be the worst thing for the president to use a cane. I know he may not like the optics.
Unsteady ground? There was nothing unsteady about the stage. I mean, what's a cane going to do for a sandbag? If you don't see it, provided something was there, if you don't see it and your cane hits it, you'll go flying even more because you're relying on the cane more than your own, you know, your own gait, if you will, your own balance. So it would be a worse fall. I'm not a doctor. He is, obviously, but it wouldn't have prevented in that situation. It wouldn't have helped. I think it would have made it worse. He's not going to use a cane. Look, it's just the whole thing is pathetic. It really is like elderly abuse. It really is. You know, if Jill Biden wasn't so in love with kissing the first gentleman on the lips and traveling around the world, of course, she's a teacher. Who does she teach? When does she teach? Where does she teach? We keep hearing she's still a teacher. Who, where, when, what, where, who, how? All right. But have you seen pictures of her? Video of her teaching in a classroom lately? But all we hear is she's a teacher. Okay. So that was what he said. But I want to go back now to June 13th, 2020. Whenever I say 2020, it reminds me of Barbara Walters. May she rest in peace from ABC News. When she used to be on 20, you know, she had this weird way of talking, a speech impediment. 2020, I can't do it, but she did it. Anyway, it was very interesting what he had to say. They were talking about Trump. Do you remember at West Point on June 13, 2020, at the commencement ceremony at West Point, Trump was walking down a little railing? And he walked slow and held on. And immediately after, the media went out of their minds. Oh, there's something wrong with him. Oh, the 25th Amendment. Oh, he's not well. Oh, he didn't fall. He didn't fall. He never fell. He didn't say he didn't make weird statements and crazy, creepy statements and forget things and say weird things. And, you know, he's not Joe Biden, but Joe Biden, they say, it's okay. Trump, they wanted him out of office because he walked slowly down the railing. He held on. So here's some of CNN's coverage of that at the time. And the last clip you'll hear here in the last voice, or one of the voices, is the same doctor you just heard from, Dr. Jonathan Reiner, talking about Biden. Here's what he said. He's in this mix with Trump. Here's JU14.
There are some questions this morning about President Trump's health, and it's because of this video of the president where you see him walking very haltingly. Maybe he just has a hard time going down a gently sloping ramp, but do you see something possibly neurological that could be throwing off his balance?
He was walking down the ramp afterwards, and he looked a little shaky. The president says no big deal. It was a downward ramp, and it was a little, he says, slippery, even though it was a clear day. The internet, as the internet does, suggesting maybe the president was having some balance issues here.
Well, it's more than just the way he walked, Aaron. One doesn't need to be a physician to note that the president hasn't looked well recently, and he didn't look well on Saturday. His speech has become very, very slow, as if he's struggling to read from the teleprompter.
That's the same doctor you heard weigh in on Biden. That's on Biden. He says, oh, well, people over 65, you know, they fall. They fall. Right. That's the first thing the doctor said to Aaron Burnett about Biden. You know, X amount of people out of 10 over 65 fall. If he would have said 80, it would have been a higher number even. But so then when Biden fell on Thursday, it was, you know, he could use a cane, but 65% of X amount of people over 65, they fall. Trump does not fall. Okay. Does not fall. He's almost the same age as Biden. And instead of saying that, he said, well, he didn't fall. And if people over 65 tend to fall, then I'm sure they tend to walk a little slower down a ramp. But no, this doctor decides to say, oh, well, you know, it's not just this. He's been looking kind of weird lately, huh? Have you heard him speak? Something must be wrong. And please, it wasn't just CNN and this doctor, and it was here's MSNBC and their coverage part of it on that day, June 13th, 2020. Here is cut number 15.
A lot of people talking about the president's health. We'll leave it to the doctors for that. But it is images like this, and even his speaking ability or lack thereof during this, again, undercuts their argument that Biden is a doddering old man.
Certainly the matter of a president's health is of great importance to the American public.
The president's health was already called into question this past weekend when he was seen on video cautiously walking down a ramp after delivering a commencement address at West Point. In fairness, he has always had issues with descending stairs and ramps.
Obviously, what's being raised as well in this focus on his health and whether he's impaired is that we've never really had a lot of transparency.
But by the way, what Brian Williams said, I had no idea that. To be fair, he's always had trouble walking down ramps and stairs. I didn't know that. I never heard that. Now, Brian Williams said it, so you got to take it with a grain of salt. We all know why Brian Williams was no longer on the NBC Nightly News and was sent over to MSNBC, because he embellished lots of stuff and got caught. So I don't know, you know, if you want to believe him or not, but that aside, and if he knows that, if he knew that, then everybody in the media should have known it. But that aside, he cautiously walked down the ramp and he's ready to be removed from office. You hear the reaction? Biden is a bumbling, stumbling old man, literally and figuratively, mentally and physically. And all you hear is, oh, this guy's vigorous. Have you ever, are you kidding? Look at the schedule he keeps. Oh, he corrects people in meetings. This is such an example. So blatantly obvious of where this media is. The double standard, the baloney. Just outrageous. Just out. And here, I want you to listen to CBS Nightly News. Here's cut number 20.
And that fall has already become the talking point for Republicans running for the White House. CBS's Ed O'Keefe is in Iowa, where former President Donald Trump is hitting the campaign trail.
Well, I hope he wasn't hurt. I hope he wasn't hurt.
Former President Donald Trump expressed concern when told of his successor's fall and referenced his own experience after a commencement at West Point in 2020.
You got to be careful about that because you don't want that, even if you have to tiptoe down a ramp.
But he couldn't resist taking a shot at his once and possibly future opponent.
That's a bad place to fall when you're making, I think it was the Air Force Academy, right? He's making, that's not inspiring.
Yeah, so that's CBS Evening News. I don't know why I wrote Nightly News. It's NBC Nightly News, CBS Evening News. And that was the report they did with Trump's comments on Biden falling. And he alluded to his own West Point incident. He alluded to his, and I love who was it? One of them when they were talking about on CNN, talking about the I think John King said that Trump said that he was walking gingerly down the ramp because it was slippery, even though it wasn't raining. I don't know the condition of the ramp, but rain isn't the only thing that makes something slippery. The surface can make it slippery. Your shoes could make it slippery. Who the heck knows? But anyway. But you see the difference. It's so blatant, so in your face. And that's just the way it is. That's just the way it goes. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a break because we're going to switch gears over to next week and what's going to happen. A couple of more entries into the Republican presidential sweepstakes, if you will. And we'll tell you who they're going to be. And we have some great stuff. You're not going to want to miss it. Steve Malzberg right here on TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's David McBride and Dr. Robert Brennan.
You went in there fresh-faced, ready to make a difference in these child's lives. Now, of course, they're not there as coming from well-adjusted backgrounds of having been parented well, having been treated well, etc., etc., etc. These kids are coming in there with often train wrecks of histories. How soon did you see what was at play there? And give us some examples.
Within a month or so, I think I started to come to the realization that something was really, really wrong, and that was because I started receiving numerous disclosures from the detainees, the children in our care, about abuse of varying kinds, emotional, physical and sexual abuse occurring. I suppose that took me down a path of learning to what extent that is and has been, and indeed the extent of the cover-up of that offending and that abuse that has been going on, from my understanding now, for decades.
McBride and Brennan with David McBride and Dr. Robert Brennan on TNT Radio.
Veterans and their families need our help to heal, recover, and reconnect upon return from service and combat operations. The casualties these families suffer can be physical or psychological, and the strain on a family unit, immense. Those who served and their loved ones now deserve our help in return. Wounded Warriors Family Support provides assistance to the families of those who have been wounded, injured, or killed in combat. Whether it's caregiver assistance, providing vacations to veterans' families, customizing vehicles for mobility of the disabled, or job training to re-enter the workforce, the Wounded Warriors Family Support Mission is here to aid the families of those who served and defended. Together, we can support these families in healing the wounds that medicine cannot. Please join our mission to help those who helped us by visiting wwfs.org. A message brought to you by TNT Radio.
The Steve Malzberg Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I welcome you back. So here is the deal. Next week, the Republican field for President of the United States is going to grow by at least two more people. Former Vice President Mike Pence will throw his hat into the ring. And by the way, he was kind of exonerated by DOJ No charges will be pressed against him for the documents that were found in his possession or residence. There was an investigation, an ongoing investigation into that as well. And that was adjudicated and announced today. Now, so Pence is going to throw his hat in the ring, and so is former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie. Let me just give you my take on first on Pence. Pence is a nice guy. Pence doesn't have a shot in hell. Pence is, first of all, Pence is as boring could be. I mean, I used to interview him often when he was a congressman, when I was at WOR. I'm just saying, you need to be a little flamboyant. You need to have a personality. And plus, someone brought this up today. I don't remember who. So it's not my thought, but it's correct. If you're a big Trump supporter, you despise Pence. Okay? You despise Pence because you feel he didn't do enough to help Trump. And if you're, what was the other part? If you're not a Trump supporter, you also don't like Pence because you think he stuck by Trump too much. So there's no audience for him. There's no demographic for him. It's just, again, these people must, I got to find out. I got to ask somebody who knows. They must get to keep the money that they're getting somehow. And plus, you put your name out there. You know, your name value goes up, I guess. It's just very strange. And then there's despicable Chris Christie. Now, I've talked about my relationship with Chris Christie before. Chris Christie, when he was running the first time for governor of New Jersey, I was at WOR. He had three debates with two other Republican candidates to get the Republican nomination, the right to run, you know, in the general election. And that final, third and final debate was on my show in my studio at WOR live on the air. And Christie told me, I used to listen to you when you did sports, and I worked with a gentleman named Art Rush Jr. and he listened to that, and he was a big sports guy, you know, in the New York, New Jersey, Connecticut area, and he listened to the show, and so he knew who I was and the whole thing, a big fan, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, after he won the nomination and blah, and for a while, he would come on my show, and then he stopped because I started criticizing everything that he was doing because I felt he broke promises and I felt he wasn't a real Republican and he was a rhino, a Republican in name only, and I lost use for him. So that's the background on me and Christie, but it doesn't change. That doesn't influence who I think he is. I mean, even while I was talking with him and he was coming on, that's why he stopped, because I challenged him. I didn't like what he was doing. Now, here is Donald Trump weighing in on the fact. Well, he was on Sean Hannity's show last night. And here he is weighing in on the fact that Christie is going to run. I think he also weighs in on Pence, cut 25.
I don't think it matters. I don't know why people are doing it. They're at 1%. Some are at zero. I hear Chris Christie's coming in. He was at 6% in New Jersey, which is, I love New Jersey, but 6% approval rating in New Jersey. What's the purpose? And he's polling at zero. And others are, I call him Ada Hutchinson. I don't call him Asa. I call him Ada Hutchinson. I gave him a little name for some reason, for certain reasons. But this guy, nobody knows who the hell he is. Never good. And some, it's fine, but I don't understand what they're doing. Now, maybe there's something wrong, but when you're at 1% or less, 1%, it says 1% with an arrow pointing left. There's one guy who's at zero with an arrow pointing left. That means he's at less than zero. So it is what it is.
It is what it is. Okay, I forgot. Well, Asa Hutchinson, I think, is already in. Yeah. Okay. So there you go. So that's Trump's view on Christie and Pence. There are some people who are excited that Christie, Christie's a big shot on ABC News. He's on This Week with Stephanopoulos on Sundays. He's on the panel. blah, 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 blah. And he's turned vicious against Trump, which enchants the idiots at The View. Here is Joy Behar and then Alyssa Farah Griffin, who worked for Trump. And here is cut number 23.
Chris Christie in 2016, he finished sixth in the New Hampshire primary.
Yeah.
But you know what? I think he can take on Trump easier than the others because he's from New Jersey.
I think this could be a little bit interesting. Listen, Chris Christie has very high unfavorables in the Republican Party, so I don't think there's a path for him to win the presidency. But I think he can play a really important role on a debate stage, yes, and in the primary challenging Trump in a way no one currently in the field has been willing to do. Taking him on his unfitness on January 6th, on his legal issues, his character. He knows him well. They know each other quite well. He helped him with debate prep. So I think he
That's
could
where he got the COVID.
Yes. He could shake up the primary in the sense that those who are unwilling to hit Trump right now, like Nikki Haley, they're going to kind of be forced to, or at least to answer questions.
Okay. So that was Alyssa Farah Griffin and Joy Behar. Here is Anna Navarro, another rhino, if ever there was a rhino, also on The View. Here is cut 24.
Remember, Chris Christie is the one that put Jared's daddy in jail.
Yeah.
Charlie Kushner. So he knows law. He knows, you know, a lot of what Trump is facing. He's got nothing to lose. I think he keeps himself relevant. He keeps himself in the news. He's going to monetize it. He can get paid speeches out of this and more media appearances. I think for Chris, he's got nothing to lose.
I think his book sold about
But you know what, though? What's crazy to me is that yesterday, Roger Stone, who supports Trump, tweeted out a fat picture and fat jokes, and already all the fat jokes against Chris Christie have begun. What I don't understand is how anybody who supports Trump can possibly joke about anybody being fat.
All right. Let me weigh in on that part first. I don't understand. I mean, I do. I guess she's implying that Donald Trump is fat. Now, whenever you see Donald Trump in a sport jacket, you know, a suit, he's wearing, I'm pretty sure, I mean, I don't think it's a secret. I don't have any inside information, but I would imagine at rallies on as president, I would imagine he was wearing, maybe I don't know. I don't think Biden does, but I don't know that either. I would imagine Trump was wearing a bulletproof vest a lot of those times. I mean, I would just guess. I have no way of knowing. I hope he is. I hope he is, the way the media targets him, the way Cory Booker, the senator from New Jersey, goes on national TV, says, my testosterone makes me want to punch him. And the way Biden says he wants to take him out behind the gym and beat the hell out of him. And, you know, right on down the list, it goes on and on. So I hope he is. But even that aside, Trump, when you think of Donald Trump, you think he's fat? When you're especially comparing him to Chris Christie? I mean, Chris Christie is slimmed down and he's way overweight from what I could see. Chris Christie used to be humongous, humongous. So Stone tweeted out a picture of Christie sitting on the beach when the beaches were closed in the aftermath of Hurricane Sandy and residents couldn't go and businesses couldn't open. Christie went with his family and sat on beach chairs in the sand on the beach, because that's the kind of moron he is. You know how counterproductive that is? You know what that makes you look like? A real a-hole. And that's why his popularity in Jersey and everywhere else, that's not why. That's one of the reasons. He's just not likable. He's not likable at all. And leave it to somebody like Behar and Alyssa Farah Griffin and Anna Navarro to say, we're excited, Chris Christie. He finished, sixth or seventh in New Hampshire when he ran in 2016? He has no, and Anna Navarro, though, hit it on the head. He's keeping himself out there. He'll be able to monetize this by making speeches afterward when he drops out, you know, paid speeches, maybe write another book, but it's all about money. All about money. There's no way, if he has any sanity, that he could think he could win or anything like that. Now, let's talk about Chris Christie. I have played you this. Christie did a lot of things that I didn't like. One of them was he appointed a judge back in 2011, I think it was. Solhal Mohammed. And he was a lawyer. He had represented Muslims rounded up by the FBI in the aftermath of 9/11. He had made some controversial comments that were considered controversial, comments that I didn't like, that I don't have in front of me, about terrorism. This Solhal Mohammed. And Christie nominated him, and he eventually got in to be in the New Jersey State Supreme Court. That's one. That's another thing that drove me nuts. It's like, what? Now, I don't have anything against a Muslim being on the court, but a guy who in the aftermath of 9/11 represented Muslims rounded up by the FBI and made what I considered to be disturbing statements about terrorism. That's the guy. So there was that. And then there was the Ground Zero Mosque, which is now a building. What's it called? Park 51. In 2010, 2011, some realtors, whatever, they wanted to build a religious center. They called it the Ground. It was became known as the Ground Zero Mosque on the site of 9/11, on the site of right by where the Trade Center was, a mosque. And there was outrage. Everybody weighed in on this one way or another. Politicians weighed in on it. Family members of those who were killed on 9/11 weighed in on it. I took calls on it all day, all week, for weeks on my show on WOR at the time. And I had a conversation with Chris Christie about it when he was governor, when he refused to weigh in on it. Now, little background. There was also a whole bunch of thing. This went on for a long time. The real estate people, the developers, whatever, some of them were in trouble. They had a criminal background or slumlord accusations, all kinds of things that delayed the project, changed. It wound up changing the people involved. So it all got changed around. So that's what I might be referring to here. But I found the audio of my interview with Chris Christie about this back in 2000 and where is it? Don't tell me. Please don't tell me. Okay, 2010. It had to be 2010. 2010, I believe. Yes. Okay, so here it is. And yes, and here is Christie and me. We're talking about the mosque, the ground, so-called Ground Zero Mosque, cut number 30.
So it transcends just politics, but it's not even politics. It's decency. It's 9/11. It's the victims. I'm surprised that you weren't more adamant and outspoken about how you feel on this. And I'm not sure how you feel on it.
Here's the way I feel about it, that this should work through the regular process that everything works through, and that the politicians who have decided to weigh into this and play politics with it are doing a disservice to our country. That's the way I feel about it. I don't believe, because I don't think that anybody that I saw speaking about this politically was coming at it from a purely genuine perspective. I think they were looking for wedge issues on both sides.
What about the family members?
Listen, I'm not talking about the family members. Yeah. I'm talking about the politicians.
Okay.
The family members absolutely have the right to express their opinion through every legal means they have to say how they feel about this issue, and I think they have every right to do that. I'm talking about the politicians, Steve, from the President of the United States on down, who decided to politicize this issue, and I don't care whether it was Barack Obama or Newt Gingrich. They both decided to politicize it for what they consider to be their own political advantage, and I just think that's wrong. That's politicizing the tragedy that happened at 9/11, and I'm not going to be a participant in it.
So
I'm
not.
Oh my gosh, what a coward. What a politically correct, calculating coward he was. And there's more. Here's cut 31.
You won't say whether or not you would prefer it be moved?
No, I'm not going to be a participant in this game as a politician of talking about these things in that way.
But don't you think politicians influence the outcome?
Listen, I want this to be a legal outcome, not a political outcome.
Well, legally, they have a right to build it.
Well, listen, Steve, there's lots of different things. Of all these things that people are talking about regarding the backgrounds of these folks winds up being true, that's going to have an effect on the legal process going forward.
Okay, would you suggest Andrew Cuomo investigate these things?
Listen, I used to hate when I was a prosecutor having politicians suggest to me what I should investigate. I used to say if they were so good at it, they'd be prosecutors and not politicians. I'm not going to be a hypocrite on this one, Steve, and become one of those politicians I used to hate when I was a prosecutor who used to tell me how to do my job.
See, so he says, I'm not going to weigh in on this politically. Let the courts handle it. And I say, and then he says, and some of the things they're talking about with these developers and all, if it's true, it might have an influence. So I said, okay. Andrew Cuomo at the time, he was not yet governor of New York. He was a federal prosecutor in the New York district. And so I said, would you urge, and Christie used to be a federal prosecutor as well. So I said, would you urge Cuomo to investigate this? I'm not going to tell him what to do. So he just will not. He's like tippy-toeing because he's scared to commit, scared to go one way or the other. Because if he goes one way and the thing comes out the other way, he'll look bad. So instead, he looks awful and cowardly. Here's the last cut of this interview, cut 32.
If you're a good prosecutor, you know how to do your job, and you should look into those things. But in the end, my view on this is pretty simple. The politicians who are using this to try to be a wedge issue for their own personal political gain are wrong on the left and on the right, and they should knock it off politicizing the tragedy that happened at Ground Zero 9 years ago. I care about those families having the ability to express their legitimate grief and their legitimate concerns about what goes on anywhere near that site. The politicians should stay the hell out of it.
Really? The politicians should stay out of it. Just the family members. Make the family members go to court. Make the family members cough up the money for the legal fees. Let it be. What do you mean politicizing what happened on 9/11? What do you mean politicizing it? I mean, I don't even want to go, but let's just say in the aftermath of World War II, I don't know. I don't even know how to compare this. I don't even know what nothing compares to it. Nothing. You're not politicizing it. You must have an opinion. You're the governor of New Jersey. Many people from New Jersey died on 9/11. You don't think it's within the realm of you being a governor to have an opinion and express that opinion on whether or not there should have been a mosque built right on the site of the World Trade Center in the aftermath of 9/11? That's politicizing it? Coward. He's just a phony and a coward. And there's more. And this is what I've played for you in the past. That was 2010. In 2012, Superstorm Sandy hit in late October. In November, this idiot, this disgrace. What now, follow me. He couldn't talk about the Ground Zero Mosque because that would be politicizing 9/11. Okay. So he goes on Saturday Night Live. Weeks, not years, like this was years after 9/11, but weeks after Superstorm Sandy killed over 40 people in his state of New Jersey and destroyed billions of dollars in property. People were homeless and burying their dead at the time he went on Saturday Night Live with Seth Meyers on Weekend Update and sat next to Seth Meyers wearing this thing that said Chris Christie Governor, like a cloth thing that he wore, you know, a sweatshirt type thing that he wore during the whole aftermath of Sandy. And he made a jackass fool of himself. He was a disgrace. I want you to listen. Here's cut 26.
It's been 3 weeks since Hurricane Sandy hit, and while the danger is past, the cleanup is just beginning. Here now to comment, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie. Coming, Governor.
Oh, thanks for having me, Seth.
So, tell us, how is cleanup going?
Well, so far so good, Seth, but this isn't a job that's going to be done in a couple of days. Fortunately, New Jerseyans are known for their patience.
They are?
Yes, they are. Oh. How many times do I have to say it to you?
You only said it once.
Once should be enough. Get the wax out of your ears.
I'm sorry.
Don't apologize. Just do it.
All right.
See, this is a skit. This is supposed to be funny. Keep in mind, 10 years after 9/11, the creep wouldn't weigh in on the Ground Zero mosque because it would be politicizing it. But 3 weeks after 40 people are dead and so many more homeless and property destroyed in his own home state, he goes on Saturday Night Live and laughs about it. What would you call that? Politicizing? Making a jackass out of yourself? Here's cut 27.
Is there anything while you're here you'd like to say to the people in New Jersey?
Oh, well, sure. If I could, Seth, I'd like to thank some people. I'd like to thank the Red Cross and first responders. I'd also like to give a special thanks to my lovely wife, Mary Pat Christie, who's here tonight, who put up with a husband who has smelled like a wet fleece for the past 3 weeks.
Yeah. You have been wearing that fleece a lot.
Oh, yeah. It's basically fused to my skin at this point.
Yeah. But I have seen you wearing suits.
Oh, yeah, but I wear them over the fleece. I'm going to die in this fleece. But that's okay. It's a good fleece.
It is a good fleece.
Stop saying things I've already said.
All right, okay.
Okay. I'm going to die in this fleece. Again, I think the number was 43 people died in Sandy just weeks prior. Who is this guy? Who does that? I mean, does a president of the United States go visit a disaster area and then come back, go on Saturday Night Live and make fun of the disaster and his role in going there? I mean, it's inconceivable to even think that somebody would be so tone deaf and stupid. I mean, it's inconceivable to even think that somebody would be so tone deaf and stupid. All right, here is what are we up to? What play the next one? I forget if we did we do 32? If not, if okay, so hit the next one.
I'm sorry, I do not thank the following. Yeah, yeah, I do not thank any of the stupid mayors who ignored my evacuation orders. You're idiots. And when you ignore me, it makes you look like a real Seth Meyers.
Oh, come on.
I'm talking here.
All right.
I also do not want to thank the reporters that put themselves in danger, you know, by walking into the middle of the hurricane with their cameras. We don't need you to tell us there's a hurricane. We have windows. And finally, I do not want to thank the people who are getting in screaming matches at gas stations over the long lines. And look, I get it. Screaming at people at gas stations is a New Jersey tradition. But you don't do it during a crisis.
And you don't go on Saturday. By the way, I'm sorry about messing up the cut. So I was looking at the thank you studio. You don't go on Saturday Night Live in the aftermath of a crisis either. There was nothing funny about gas lines. There's nothing funny about him wearing that stupid shirt. There's nothing funny about anything he's trying to make funny. Yelling at the mayors for not obeying his evacuation order. I mean, who the hell? What is this? And then here's the last one. This really takes the cake. He's gonna quote a line from a Bruce Springsteen song. Who he refers to Bruce Springsteen first as a poet and then a god, I believe. Here is 29.
Well, thank you so much for coming. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me, Seth. If I may conclude, perhaps with a line from a famous New Jersey poet. Everything dies, baby. That's a fact. But everything that dies one day comes back. Put your makeup on. Fix your hair up pretty. And meet me tonight in Atlantic City.
If I'm not mistaken, that's Bruce Springsteen?
That's right, Seth.
I don't know if I'd call him a poet.
You're right. He's more of a saint.
You're right. Governor Chris Christie, everyone.
Right, he's more of a saint. Okay. Now, that's not what bothers me. He could call him a saint. He could call him a god. He could call him whatever he wants. He could quote whatever he wants. But he quoted a line from a song that says, "Everything dies, baby. That's a fact." And again, for the umpteenth time, I'll tell you, 40-some-odd people died in the storm that he's on there joking about. And that's the line he quotes from Bruce Springsteen? Everything dies, baby. That's a fact. How much out of your mind do you have to be? How big, how fat does your ego have to be? And this is the guy who's going to now go and tear apart Donald Trump. You know, maybe I should send all this to the former president. Maybe he could make some use of it. Between the judge, you know, pointing the judge that he did at the time and not weighing in on the Ground Zero Mosque and this buffoonery on Saturday Night Live, this insult to every New Jerseyan who lost a loved one, who lost a home, who had damaged property, who was living in, you know, in a shelter with the TV on, watching this buffoon on Saturday Night Live. Insensitive. They need a new word for what it was, a new word. All right. When we come back, the biggest kiss ass interview you've ever heard. Not me. I'm not in it. I'm Steve Malzberg. One final segment left in the week on the Steve Malzberg Show on TNT Radio.
You should hear what Timothy Shea is talking about.
Most people haven't even been involved in politics before. Or if they did, you know, we used to say that political campaigns didn't heat up until after Labor Day. No, not Labor Day the year before the election. Labor Day the couple months before the election. Politics was never on people's radar like it is now. And the left took advantage of that. So while most Americans were busy keeping their heads down, doing a good job at work, doing a good job bringing up their children, paying their taxes, getting their 2 weeks vacation to go out to the lake or wherever, up to the mountains or wherever it is they go to the beach. The left, for over 100 years now, has been incrementally pushing this, doesn't matter what you call it, socialist, fascist, communist, totalitarian, dictatorial. It's all the same thing. It's all about control. It doesn't matter what label you put on it. It's a bunch of whiners, a bunch of losers, that the only thing they can build is the tearing down of things. The only thing they can achieve is the tearing down of a culture that took millennia to build. It's unbelievable, and yet here we are.
The Reckoning with Timothy Shea on today's News Talk, TNT Radio. The Steve Malzberg Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Boy, I haven't plugged my social media in a long time. Follow me on Twitter at Steve M. Talk, Facebook Steve M. Talk, Instagram Steve M. Talk, website is stevemtalk.com, YouTube channel. Again, the YouTube channel and the website, you know, works in progress that are not in progress, but there's stuff there you might find interesting. You could subscribe to the YouTube channel so when I finally do more stuff, you'll know about it. That's all Steve M. Talk. It's all Steve M. Talk. Okay. Mark Levin. Hold on now. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Mark Levin much. I don't know if you know him he's a radio person turned into a Fox News weekend host. He's one of the most popular talk show hosts out there. I was the first person to have him on, I believe, as a guest when I was at WABC Radio. Actually, to be quite honest with you, I heard Bob Grant, the legendary Bob Grant, my idol when I was growing up, who I had my first full-time job was actually working as his producer, which is like fantasy stuff. Anyway, so Bob Grant, I was driving into the Lincoln Tunnel, going to WABC. Grant was on OR. Grant had on this guy, Mark Levin. I said, I'm going to have to find him and call him. And I did. And whatever. He wound up getting a show on WABC, and then he has the show on Fox, and now he's been syndicated for a long, long time. He was at Landmark Legal Foundation when I heard him. Anyway, but here he is interviewing Donald Trump, who has a book out. Apparently, it's letters that Trump wrote to people. Not a bad idea. I guess the interview is over, and here's Levin. I mean, really, I mean, you have to really be overtaken by awe of somebody to talk like this, or I don't know, or have some kind of interest. And maybe at the end we get a little hint. I'm not saying, I don't know. You decide. I'll just play it for you. At the end, you could decide. Here's cut 3:18.
I've talked to a lot of important people, Supreme Court justices, presidents, presidential candidates, brilliant people. And talking with you is really the most impressive conversation I've had. Number one, there's very few people who could sit there and speak the way you do from subject to subject to subject to subject. If people would let you speak and actually listen to you. While you have the enormous pressure on your shoulders of these grand juries and other things going on, and you still are able to do it. That is absolutely remarkable.
Okay. We've all heard Donald Trump speak. We've all heard Donald Trump debate. We've all heard Donald Trump make remarks as a candidate, as president, as a former president, even before these grand juries. Really? I love what Donald Trump did as president, for the most part. Love it. And I wish he would, you know, if he could change, I wish that he would be the nominee and all that kind of stuff. But really, I've spoken to presidents and presidential candidates and brilliant people, but nobody speaks like you do. Really? Donald Trump? He speaks like the everyman. And he speaks about himself. And I didn't see the interview, so I don't know. But really? Come on. Here's 319.
And as you go through the history of your presidency, and I read these letters in this book, it was a phenomenal presidency. Phenomenal presidency. And the reason you don't get the credit that you deserve is because perhaps that's going to be up to history. When people look back and say, wait a minute, he was right about this and this and this and so forth. What happened is you upset the apple cart. That is, Hillary was supposed to win and she was supposed to be the third term of Obama. And they never forgave you. And we're facing a period in history now, somebody who studies history very carefully, where the country is facing very dangerous change. We're regressing. And regressing towards what you call correctly this Marxist ideology. And so you're not going to get a fair break from the people in Washington and the media.
Duh. Really? Duh. And now comes a little revelation that, again, he might have said, he might have talked about it right at the beginning of the interview. I didn't see it. I just saw this end part. But there's a connection between Mark Levin and the book, which may enter into this. I don't know. I don't know if he has a financial stake in this. I would doubt it, but I don't know. And I don't think he needs the money. So I just, but here it is. Here's 320.
They want you to do what Republicans normally do, roll over and play dead. And that's clearly not in your personality. I want you to know this is a fantastic book, Letters to Trump. I want to encourage people to get it so you can see who Donald Trump, who you were speaking with throughout your life and throughout your career and what they were saying without anybody interfering and involved interpreting it for anybody else. So I want to thank you for all the time you've given us here, and it's been a tremendous honor.
Well, thank you very much, Mark.
God bless you.
My great honor. Thank you very much.
And one other thing. Go to the very end of the book, and you'll see my wife. And me, the very end of the book.
There you go. Picture of Mark Levin and his wife. No, I don't think that he didn't co-author the book or anything, so there's no money. I just think he was sucking up to him. I don't really think so. Levin doesn't suck up, but Levin doesn't. I mean, really? Donald Trump's the most, you know, whatever he said. I'm paraphrasing. Intelligent, you know. Well-spoken, I've never heard anybody like you in charge of the facts, and so and no, from subject to sub. Really? Really? You ever listen to talk radio? You ever listen to yourself, Mark? I mean, really? Donald Trump? It's hard for him to keep a sentence together without talking about himself. It's hard for him to stay on topic. I didn't see the interview. Maybe it was the most brilliant thing ever. But in general, really? Donald Trump? The most brilliant person that he's ever interviewed, including presidents and ex-presidents and presidential candidates and everything? Really? Come on. That can't be. Okay. All right. What could I say? On the surface, gets qualified as a big K-A-I, a kiss-ass interview, as opposed to a kick-ass interview. No, I shouldn't say that either. End of interview. A kiss-ass summary of interview. with subject in attendance, because I didn't see the interview, to be fair. Okay, so that's the story, folks. It's been a fun week. Whew. Next week, God willing, we'll all be here again, and we'll see what's what unfolds, and we'll talk about it. That's what we do. Don't forget to tell your friends, tell your enemies. If they agree with me or don't agree with me, this is the place that they should be. And don't go anywhere if you're listening right now. Jason Olborn and Compass is on deck. I'm Steve Malzberg. Have a great rest of your weekend right here on TNT Radio.